Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:10 Pacific Summer Time, and today is Friday, August 22nd. Of course, being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, let's first have a review of what's been happening this week. And, well, the S&P 500 has been up on consecutive days. It's right back up to test this psychological 2000 level. It was as high today as 1991, I think it was 92 earlier yesterday, but it was finishing down on the day just a tad. Well, when we look at this level, then you would consider that you know there might be some consolidation in this level, and we've certainly seen some of that already. The Nasdaq has already broken out to new highs. Apple, which is a major constituent and by far the largest constituent still of the Nasdaq 100 index, has already broken out. So obviously, big caps still doing very well there, not least, well, Google as well found support in the region of the moving average just a couple of weeks ago, and really hadn't had much of a decline to speak of anyway. Well, then when we look at Europe, well, the outlook is still pretty cloudy. And, I guess the Ukrainian government today said that they consider the convoy of 280 trucks that came into Ukraine from Russia, which was, I think part of the negotiations was that it was supposed to be accompanied by the Red Cross, but in fact it was not accompanied by the Red Cross. They constitute that as an invasion. Well, I guess you'd have to consider that as a deterioration in what is a very volatile geopolitical situation. Well, when we then look at Europe generally, it has had this fairly large pullback. Then we've had this nice bounce over the last 2 weeks. But what we're starting to see is that there's at least a pause here in the region of the moving average for some of these major indices, not least the DAX, but also the Euro Stoxx Index. Well, these are the largest declines that we've seen in at least 2 years for the majority of these indices. When you see a market that has found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on successive occasions, and then it fails to do that, and then it starts to encounter resistance in the region of the moving average, which we regard as a trend mean, well, then you'd have to start thinking that this is a trend in consistency and that you are starting to see the foundations for a downtrend in evidence. So what happens in the region of the moving average really is important, because if we continue to see that resistance is encountered in the region of the trend mean, and then we start to see the market taking the lows out from posted in late July and early August, well, then that would be a significant sign of deterioration. But we're not there yet. What we're seeing at the moment is a pause in the region of the moving average, and well, I think it's probably going to be subject to the developing geopolitical situation. That this is a situation which is ebbing and flowing, that it is moving very much in time with Russia's Russia's plans in the region. There's certainly nothing that's happening here is happening in a random fashion, and that there is a larger objective at play, that it's not simply market oriented, that the market is reacting to the situation as it develops. But something that we've spoken of on multiple occasions is that a situation has got to be seen to be getting worse in order for it to continue to have a negative impact on markets. Well, the situation had moderated over the last 10 days, but well, what we're seeing in here today is that there is the potential for it to deteriorate once more. Well, realistically, with the gains that the Ukrainian army had in Europe, that it was an open question as to whether then the Russians would support the separatists or whether they would let them, hanging in the wind. Well, a convoy of 280 trucks carrying, the Russians only know what, then that could be constituted as support, well, humanitarian support, but of course humanitarian support for whom? Is it humanitarian support that will be specifically designed to support the separatists? Almost certainly. Well, If you look at Europe, then it is a rather uncertain environment. There's been a great deal of speculation in the media over the last week as to whether the Eurozone crisis will flare up once more as a result of this heightened geopolitical situation. Well, it's certainly not a tailwind for stock markets. It means that the ECB, which has been pretty clear in its guidance that they're willing to do just about whatever it takes. Well, let's think about it. Germany is by far the largest economy. It's got the largest population. It's taking a leadership role within Europe, where Angela Merkel is slated to visit Kiev next week. Well, if the Eurozone economy is going to be under pressure as a result of geopolitics, well, realpolitik is going to then have to come into effect, and that would suggest that the ECB's hand isn't going to be held back by the Bundesbank or by the German government, that they will do whatever it takes. So we can anticipate that the monetary environment is going to become easier in Europe if geopolitical tensions deteriorate further. Well, that's not especially positive for the euro. Well, the euro was a little bit steadier yesterday, but weaker again in here today. It's down to 132.41. And, well, if you think that no country wants a particularly strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others, then, well, the Europeans need a weak currency. And, well, perhaps even more so than the Japanese need a weak yen, but the yen was also weak in here today against the US dollar. Well, you have to ask then, is the dollar's recent strength more because the US economy is firing on all cylinders, or because everyone else needs a weaker currency? You'd have to think it's the latter, that the US economy is stronger on a relative basis, but that it on an absolute basis, you'd be hard pressed to make a very concerted argument for a strong dollar, when we just don't know exactly when the Fed is going to start raising interest rates. Well, if you take the uncertainty that you have in Europe and you contrast it with what is going on in Asia, then you're getting a very different picture in here this week. Mainland Chinese market was really quite firm. The Indian market is still firm, and the banking sector broke out to new highs in here today. The Japanese market has been rallying. It was just a tad weaker in here today, but the second section, which we regard as a lead indicator, and those are the small caps, continues to push higher. The Australian index was just a little bit higher in here today, but broadly speaking, what you're seeing is relative strength coming through in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, in Korea, in Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines. And, well, if we go back to first principles, and we ask a very simple question about governance, and, well, we've said for a long time that governance is everything, so let's start to frame this picture in terms of governance. Well, can we say that governance is improving or deteriorating within the Eurozone? I think you'd have to conclude that it is pretty staid, that it isn't really getting better or getting worse. So, well, that frames then the view about Europe, that what we have is very lax monetary policy, that monetary policy is likely to get even more easy, subject to events, but that we haven't had the big bang in terms of major improvements in governance, that what would solidify the Eurozone is a greater push towards federalism. Well, that's simply not acceptable to the majority of voters, and that a pretty solid argument would need to be made to those voters in order for them to really get behind it, and that there's a democratic deficit, there is a regulatory deficit, there is an institutional deficit to support the single currency. So, well, what we're presented with is this environment where, well, regulation isn't, or governance isn't really improving, but neither is it deteriorating, and that it is, I guess you would have to say, that it is calcified the way things are at present. Well, if you contrast that then with the US, well, The US has got some natural advantages in that its currency union is more than 150 years old, and that it has the institutions and it has the decision-making capabilities. Well, it also has a central bank that has been incredibly activist, that isn't constrained by any particular mandate, and has taken on a great deal of additional responsibility, as well as in a similar vein to what the ECB has done. Well, there are a number of things that the US could do in order to improve governance, but I would have to say that it's probably calcified, that we're not getting a deterioration very much in where we are right now, but that it isn't improving markedly either. Well, you don't generally tend to get these big bangs in terms of governance improvement in the absence of a crisis. And, well, there isn't a crisis in the US at present, and certainly not in the stock market, and neither in the bond market. Well, the 30-year treasury that was issued in December of last year is up about 14%. Well, the majority of those bonds had pulled back very sharply last year, so they bounced back and they're basically retesting their peaks for at least some of those bonds. But, well, when we look at the wider picture, then we're presented with not great value. If you are thinking about putting your kids through college, then, well, the inflation that you're getting in education is about 6% a year. 2.25% on a long-term bond isn't going to compensate you for that. Well, you don't have much choice if you want yield than to either go further out the ratings curve or to get into higher yield. And, well, one of the things that has compensated people for higher yield is share buybacks. And that has remained a powerful tailwind for the stock market. Well, if you then go back and think about governance in Asia, well, by and large, it's improving. Well, in Indonesia, Mr. Widodo is the new president, and, well, he's not from the established oligarchy. And it's a very similar situation for Mr. Modi in Asia, in India. So people are looking on this region and saying that you have the largest populations in the world, you have that demographic dividend in a number of countries, well, probably not in China or in Japan, but certainly just about everywhere else, and that they are voting to bring in people that they think can really get productivity gains going, that people will be allowed to reach their economic potential and move upwards into the middle classes. Well, the greatest urbanization in history isn't something that has stopped, that a lot of people just forgot about it for a while, but that it's still very much in action. And in fact, because governance is improving in Africa as well, and that is also where you perhaps don't have the largest populations, but you have the greatest population growth, that you have the rise of a middle class in Africa where none previously existed. And, well, that's a major growth story. That demand for just about everything is likely to continue to increase, and that is subject to governance continuing to improve. Well, you have had the Big Bang type moves in India and in Indonesia, and, well, those are the types of things that when people see positive outcomes in one country, that they start to think about, why can't we have that here too? There is an infection rate for improving governance. Well, China is engaged in this fight against corruption, which has a number of aims, but obviously to solidify the new administration's position, not only in the government but in the army and in the corporate sector and the state-owned sector. But it's also clamping down on corruption. One of the reports that I've posted today makes the point that the removal of vested interests from the power sector has allowed the introduction of smart metering, and that that's one of the main benefits of this fight against corruption, that you're tackling vested interests that have been a roadblock to additional regulatory reform. Well, That's important. Well, not least because the Chinese market is cheap. That on an absolute basis, you're seeing that a number of, not least the banks, that they have higher yields than they do PEs. Well, the banks have been issuing a lot of capital. They've been borrowing and they've been issuing additional share capital. And that's to preserve themselves against the rising tide of defaulting loans. Well, that's not a new story. That what you're seeing is that we've been through quite a lengthy period of consolidation for the market, and that a more bullish outlook is starting to be priced in. Well, not least because the market is cheap. And when you think about where we are in terms of other markets, that the relative position of China on a PE basis is really quite compelling. Well, when you look at the geopolitical situation, you start to put a geopolitical premium on the market. Well, there was never a geopolitical premium on Europe, and that's now being introduced. Eastern Europe has to have a higher geopolitical risk premium attached. Well, there's very little risk premium attached to the U.S. That, well, with the surge in unconventional oil and gas, that, well, the U.S. is now the largest producer of energy, the largest consumer, and, well, could potentially become an exporter of oil in the next few years. Well, that's really a game changer, and that would greatly increase the country's geopolitical weighting globally. That oil exports might not be exports to everywhere, but that they could be sanctioned, or they could be allowed to go to countries which would be deemed friendly. Well, Brazil is probably a net beneficiary of the geopolitical tension in Europe. Well, there was that tragic air accident last week, and a new candidate has been proposed to run against President Rousseff in October. Well, it's almost certainly going to go to a presidential runoff, and there's a quite likely scenario that President Rousseff may not be the next president. Well, she hasn't done a very good job of removing roadblocks and regulatory obstacles to enhancing the country's productivity. But perhaps more to the point is that a number of the key weightings in the Brazilian index have bottomed. That you're looking at Petrobras and Vale, that have had a pretty dire outcome priced in. And, well, the outcome isn't nearly as dire as it has been priced in, so you're getting a re-rating. Well, the Brazilian banks are in pretty good form, and that, well, there is the potential for a meaningful change in governance in Brazil, too. Well, what we're seeing is that there's a rise of geopolitical tension on the one hand, and that you're getting improving governance on the other. Well, the rising geopolitical tension can be viewed as a symptom of an inability to improve governance. That high commodity prices in the decade from about 2002 through to 2007, 2008, well, that papered over a lot of the cracks among despotic regimes. Well, those that have grasped the nettle of improving governance and allowing people creating the conditions where people can move up into the middle classes and have a greater sense of that they have control over their own lives have been able to progress. But those that haven't been able to do that, well, many of them have got quite young populations. And, well, they've had to resort to some pretty extreme actions to control them. Well, when you view it in those terms, then the countries that have got improving governance are those that are likely to have the outsized rewards, that that diversification or segregation within the emerging markets along the lines of those with improving governance versus those that don't is likely to become much more of a factor in the next few years than it has been previously. Well, previously, rising tide lifted all boats, but now what we're seeing is that it's a very different situation indeed. Well, if you start then to think about this, that, well, governance is has always been important, but it's likely to be even more important in future. That, well, we've gone through a period of time of relative peace, but that's unlikely to persist, that the risk of conflagration is greater than it has been. Well, then we look at monetary policy. Well, monetary policy is remarkably easy in Japan, in Europe, and in the US. The UK is talking about being among the first developed markets to raise interest rates. Well, monetary policy isn't just easy there. It's easy in Canada. It's easy in Australia and Switzerland as well. Well, it's easy right across the OECD. Well, central banks are serial bubble blowers. And, well, if we take a big step back and we look at the S&P, well, then it ranged from 2000 all the way through 2013 and it broke upwards last year. Well, the upper side of that long range was between 1550 and 1600, and it's currently trading at 2000. Well, in other words, it's up a third. Well, is this a peak or is it going to go higher? Well, I guess that's a big question. Well, then let's look at address the consistency. Well, the consistency of this trend, particularly over the last 2 years or since the breakout, is that there hasn't been a reaction of greater than 10%. Well, that's a major consistency characteristic. Well, until you start to see a reaction of greater than 10%, you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, when we start to look at various trends, well, you can think about big round numbers, and well, $100 was a big round number for oil back in 2007. It ranged below that level for about 6 months, then it broke out and went to about 140. Well, it was around the $600, and of course Apple's shares have been consolidated since, but if I remember correctly, it was around, well, it was when Apple had been trending for a couple of years in a remarkably consistent fashion, that it had these ranges one above another, and the ranges were relatively similar sized, and it had found support in the region of the 200-day moving average until about the end of 2011, and then it took off. It went from, well, in terms of the shares, it went from 60, now where the shares are at least following the consolidation, went from 60 to over $90 in the space of about 3 months. Then it pulled back, went to another new high, and then pulled back really meaningfully and had a much deeper reaction and unwound the entire accelerated advance before, moving on to new highs recently. But again, between the beginning of the acceleration and hitting a new all-time high, you're talking about 2.5 years. Well, if we look at the S&P, is there potential that the indices could actually accelerate higher from where they are now? Well, if people start to really believe that the Fed is not going to raise interest rates, that they are going to continue to keep very easy monetary policy, and what we are seeing in the Nasdaq at present is that the pace of the advance has picked up. Well, the Nasdaq's advance was really very, very consistent, that from 2000 onwards, that you had one range above another, that those ranges were relatively similar sized, but from about March of 2013, the pace of the advances picked up. Well, you can see that very clearly when you look at the moving average, or when you just look at the simple price action, that the size of the reactions has become smaller, that the reversions to the mean are less frequent, and that the market has just had its shallowest reaction to date and is currently pushing on to new high ground. Well, it's probably a bit early to say that the Nasdaq is accelerating higher, but, well, it's not far off it, that if you start to see these markets, it's already, let's see, the moving average is at 3,660, the index is at 4,050, well, that's 400 points. Well, let's say that it's 10% overextended relative to the moving average. Well, it generally doesn't get very much beyond 10% overextended relative to the moving average before it has had a pullback previously. Well, this would put us in a very interesting juncture, that, well, potentially what we've seen with the central banks previously is that they have inflated bubbles by leaving excess monetary stimulus in the system for longer than it is strictly needed. Well, the stock market was deliberately targeted by the central bank in an effort to reinvigorate animal spirits. It certainly succeeded in inflating asset prices. And, well, you're seeing that some of these shares are beginning to pick up pace on the upside. Well, it's not because valuations are at absolute lows, that we're 5 years plus into a medium-term bull market. Well, what has previously been a consistent uptrend can end in a number of different ways. That we could move into a ranging consolidation, which allows a reversion to the mean. You might get a somewhat larger reaction. You spend a good deal of time ranging. That allows the some mean reversion to occur in terms of valuations, and allows a regrouping in terms of investor sentiment. But, well, in an environment where we have extraordinarily accommodative monetary policy, that, well, the alternative is that it we see that markets accelerate higher. Well, that's not something that people are really considering. Well, it occurred to me yesterday, having got two or three different articles saying that the Eurozone crisis was about to erupt once more, and that there was a large risk that the Fed was going to have to jump in and raise interest rates because inflationary pressures were about to get the better of it. Well, what about the alternative? What about the possibility that the Fed doesn't raise interest rates? They've told us that they're not really thinking about raising interest rates until the end of 2015. Well, what if we're 15 or 16 months away from the next interest rate hike, that government bond yields are very low, that shares are companies are continuing to buy back their shares, and that there is a dearth of yield? Well, if you don't get yield, you have to go for capital appreciation. Well, in the absence of evidence to the contrary, you'd have to conclude that the Nasdaq is the pace of Nasdaq advance is actually picking up, that we could actually be moving into an accelerating phase. Acceleration is wonderful if you've got a long position. It's when you need to be most diligent about your stops if you want to hold on to those profits. But, well, we know what happens when a market becomes way overextended relative to a trend mean, that more often than not you're going to get a violent pullback. In other words, enjoy it while it lasts, that if you've got leverage positions, this is the time to become progressively more diligent with stops, and that when we do start to see things roll over, that they could happen in a very swift manner, but that, we're in the early stages yet, that it's not quite over, it's not accelerating, but that there is the possibility that it might yet do that. Well, what about gold? What about bonds? Well, bond yields are, they're pretty tight, and not least in Europe, where the Bund is trading at 150. Well, the yield is less than 1%, that this is, the people are pricing in a Japanese-type scenario for Europe. Well, they might not be wrong, that in the with a calcified regulatory environment and governance environment, that you could well have this rather static environment for a number of the European economies. So that, let's see what happens in terms of the geopolitics. That really is an additional way of looking at the market that we haven't had to look at previously. Well, if you think about it, then monetary policy isn't going to be tightening up anytime soon. And, if you're going to have a deflationary environment, that, gold isn't going to have any competition from interest rates. And that, if the value of your money is being eroded by excessive monetary stimulus, then the argument for owning gold is pretty compelling. Well, quite whether it is as compelling for the Indians and Chinese, if their economies are recovering and their stock markets are moving to outperformance, is probably open to question. And that might be why we're continuing to see this ranging environment. Well, gold is at around $1,280. It was down reasonably sharply yesterday. Well, there's no evidence yet that this ranging environment is about to end, but that if you're at above $1,200, that this is a pretty good environment for gold shares, not least because they've stopped spending money. Well, when you look at the London Metal Exchange's index of industrial metals, then it looks like it's forming a first step above the base, and that the recovery in demand for industrial resources in Asia might well help to push prices higher. Well, if that's the case, then the resources sector is still pretty low. That we had a nice move earlier in the year, that much of that move has since been consolidated, and that a number of shares are back in the region of their 200-day moving averages. Well, we've been looking for the resources to move to a position of outperformance. That's generally a late in the cycle move. Well, we haven't had an accelerated move just yet. That certainly there's been more positive signs. There's been a number of them have broken progressions of higher reaction lows, that they're trading above their respective 200-day moving averages. But there's no way you could possibly say that they are accelerating higher at the present moment. But you can't rule it out that it might yet happen either. Well, when we look at the soft commodities, there's certainly no inflationary pressures coming in at the present time. Well, feeder cattle do look like they are going to come lower. And, well, corn was relatively steady in here today. It had that upside weekly key last week. Well, it has held on to the majority of the advance, but no real follow-through. Soybeans, on the other hand, was stronger by 29 cents in here today. Well, that is coming off an equally depressed level. What it does look like is we're getting a little bit of rotation in the agriculturals. And, well, oil markets. There is approximately an $8 spread between WTI and Brent crude. Well, Brent crude is hovering here in the region of the $100 area. It's around $102 in here today. Well, it's a predominantly range-bound environment, and we're at the lower side of the range. You'd really have to have pretty meaningful move in terms of demand destruction in order to push prices very much beyond where they are now on Brent crude. Heightened geopolitical risk could actually push the price higher, well, not least if ISIS is successful in moving into southern Iraq, but that does look really quite unlikely at this stage, not least because the U.S. Air Force isn't going to allow that to happen. Well, it would suggest that WTI, though, can go a little bit lower from where we are, but that it is also coming into an area of potential support, and that there is a short-term oversold condition evidence, so that, oil is probably going to range, but probably range lower over the medium term, not least because you just have so much additional supply coming online. Well, there's a pretty detailed report again that I've posted in here today. It's from the Texas. I've posted the piece about Petrobras because it's got one of the more compelling chart action. Well, that pre-salt has taken 3 or 4 years to come through, but that we're seeing that production is multiplying from there, and we can anticipate that it is going to get even more. So that, non-OPEC oil is actually improving, and that's really very positive indeed. Well, I think that's probably enough to digest, and I think I will leave it with that, and wish all the best to all of you.